So first, thanks for the invitation. And I'm very happy to be here. And this is my first time visiting here. I'm already very enjoying being here. So I will talk about supersymmetric Landau Ginzburg tensor model. This is a work in progress with Mukund Ragamani and his student, Sean Colin Erwin. And we hope to publish this work very soon, maybe this month. And so let me first give some motivation and backgrounds of this. So the Melloni tensor model is a recently discovered subgroup model. And it's solvable. And so it's solvable in the sense that there is a larger limit you can define. And in the larger limit, a particular class of Feynman diagrams called Melloni diagrams would dominate. And this class of Feynman diagrams, you can exactly resum them and then give you exact result in larger limit. And this model usually is defined as a quantum mechanics model, and it relates to lots of interesting physics like SYK, and also the gravity dual of them would be the ADS2 quantum gravity. And also it also relates to black holes, and there are also lots of interesting things. And so today's talk I will focus in on try to generalize this one-dimensional quantum mechanical model, the Melloni tensor model, to higher dimension. Higher dimension means D is larger or equal to 2. And we will see later that if we want to generalize it to higher dimension, then the supersymmetry is, we need to have supersymmetry. I will try to argue this later. So let's try to see. Let's first look at this 1D Melloni tensor model and see why they are solvable in larger. So this new larger limit. Was first proposed by Gorrah and Witten. And also studied by Karazi, Tanasa, Kavanaugh, and Tomakowski. So it, as I said, is a 1D quantum mechanics. And there are tensor fields living on the one-dimensional wall lines, and I denote it by phi with some tensor indexes, right? Yes, A1, A2, up to AQ minus 1. So these tensor indexes, A, R, run from 1 to N, and this R is the, from 1 to Q minus 1. So we have Q minus one indices. And we just consider the usual kinetic term like this one square. And plus a quartic potential. Sorry. In the general case, we consider phi to the Q with power potential. And Q must be even. And Q is greater or equal to 4. And so here I just schematically write in like this. And more explicitly, when Q equals 4, this potential looks like this. So the rule of writing this potential is that for each pair of fields, there is exactly one index contract between them. A2, B3, B5, B1, B2, A3. So you can see, for example, this pair, there's this A1 contract between them. And for that pair, you get B3 contracted between them. And so this particular contraction structure can be drawn like this. So for each pair of phi, there's one index contraction. And so for q equals 4, it looks like tetrahedron. So this is also called a tetrahedral contraction structure. And the large n limit is defined that I take n to infinity and fix in g squared and n cubed. And I define it to be j squared. So this is the model. And so to study the Feynman diagram of this model, we can use the trivial line notation. For example, the propagator will be represented by three straight lines. And this interaction vertex can be drawn like this. So the trick is just first try to draw a planar diagram and then add a middle line. Like that. So that's the interaction vertex. And so let's try to see that how to solve this model in the large n limit. So let's see. Maybe write on this board. So let's consider the two-point function. So at tree level, we just have this bare propagator. And one, actually the next order is two loop. So at two loop, we have this. And we can see that this propagator goes like one. And this two loop diagram will go like g squared n cubed. There are two interaction vertex, so there's a g squared, and there are three index loops, one, two, and three, so n cubed. And that's j squared. So in that limit, these two diagrams are the same order. And more generally, you can consider diagrams with this particular structure repeated. So for example, you can consider this kind of diagram. Like that. So, and these diagrams are called Melloni diagrams. And the claim is that in the larger limit, these diagrams will dominate. And we only need to consider these diagrams in leading larger limit. So to get a sense of why these will dominate, let's try to look at non-Melloni diagrams, some simple non-Melloni diagrams. For example, like this one loop diagram is non-Mellonic, and this, let's see, this four loop diagram is also non-Mellonic. So if we try to draw this diagram in the triple line notation, we have this. So this vertex, you can see that I used that vertex right here. And this diagram goes like g times n. There's one interaction vertex and one index loop. And it's j over square root of n. So it's subleading. And you can also try to draw this four loop diagram in the triple line notation, and you will find that it goes like j to the 4 n squared, and also subleading. So So I hope this would enough to convince you that the Meloni diagram indeed dominates in the larger limit. So now we can only work with Meloni diagrams, and they can be resolved. So for example, we also focus on the two-point function, and we can write down a set of Swinger-Dyson equations like this. So we have a self-energy, and this equals to and the two-point function is a geometric series of the self-energy. So the geometric series is just very, very easy to sum. And then the self-energy can also be written as some integral of three exact two-point functions. And these two equations are just a closed set of equations for two functions, and we can just at least solve them numerically. So,
this first equation is only valid in the straight line to infinity limit?
Yeah, in the larger limit, yeah. So, yeah. Because if you do not take a larger limit, you need to consider other diagrams. And then, also, the cubic vertex would get renormalized. Oh, sorry, the quadratic vertex would get renormalized, and you introduce more functions, and you will get more equations, and you cannot quite truncate the equation down to this simple two equations. Okay. So, all these are relies on a very special type of interaction vertex in this one. And so you can try to consider more general interaction vertex, but then you will pretty quickly find that all this nice structure will get broken. For example, let's consider some other vertex. For example, this one. You have the 4, 5 contracted in this way. And there's another vertex you can consider. Right. So if I draw this in the triple line notation, it's like this. And this guy is like that. Okay. So let's try to see that how these two interaction vertex would lead to the problem on Meloni dominance. So, for example, we consider the simplest one-loop non-Meloni diagram, this one. And in the triple line notation, it would go like that if I use the particular interaction vertex. So let me give them names, and I can refer to them later. So this interaction vertex, usually people call it pillow. And that one, people call it double song. So here, for example, I did not use the tetrahedral interaction vertex, but instead I used the pillow vertex. And so then this diagram goes like G n squared, because now I have two index group. So this goes like J times square root of n. So it has more n power than the Melonic diagram. So the diagram using Melonic vertex, tetrahedral vertex. So this shows that we really need to only have that particular tetrahedral contraction in the potential. But this would cause the problem that in the standard law of quantum field theory, we know that renormalization group flow would generally generate all interaction vertex that's allowed by symmetry. And in general, in Yeah, you can. But then in the potential, you need to have some g's of order one, some g of order one over n.
Yes, but I think the RJ, for example, you would generate this one exactly with the power you need. Like this pseudo term, you can generate it by giving, for example, two tetrahedrons together,
mm-hmm.
and the power you get is not this one. You get one over square root
n, compensating this square root n. Okay.
I think so.
Yeah.
Maybe you are
able to see this. Yeah, but I'm for this talk, I'm proposing another way out that does not rely. I would consider supersymmetry and then forbid all these vertexes getting generated. Okay. So not just tetrahedral vertex would be there on the RG flow, or other vertices will also get generated. But there's one way to get rid of other vertices is to consider supersymmetry. And supersymmetry would constrain the RG flow such that if you put the interaction in the superpotential, then all the other terms cannot be generated. And so in this talk, I will consider the 2D equals 2,2 version of the Melloni tensor model. And I will consider chiral superfield x, y, so I would focus on the case of q equals 4 and a chiral superfield with three tensor indexes, and the action of this model is like that. And there's a Keller potential spot, and there's a superpotential. That's the complex conjugate. And for the Keller potential, I would just consider the simplest possibility that you can have is this A2, A3, contract with A2. Okay, and I will put this tetrahedral contraction term in the superpotential. So the superpotential is go like this. Okay. And all the discussion was just very similar to the previous discussion. So we can define a larger limit that n goes to infinity and fixing j squared equals g n cubed. And this limit there will be Meyerlani dominance. In the supergraph. And you can also write the Feynman diagrams in component fields, you also show Meyerlani dominance. And this model has an ON and cube symmetry that corresponds to the rotation of XAY to A3. And so for this model, there's a very important deformation. So I would talk about the non-renormalization theorem of the superpotential and the renormalization of Keller potential later. But before that, let me try to introduce a generalization of this model that we call an isotropic deformation. So this deformation will be important later. And let me just first try to introduce it. And so here we consider a slightly different superpotential. We have also, so here I write down the summation explicitly. And times the same x to the 4. So here there are some ambiguity on the g and the alpha. So you can rescale g to lambda times g, and alpha to lambda minus 1 times alpha, and the integration is the same, but the coupling here should be understood up to this redefinition. And this deformation will break the O n cube down to O 1 through 3 n. That's the same as Z 2 through 3 n. And then next, I would like to argue that this deformation would preserve the Meyerlani dominance. So here the Meyerlani dominance, so here the Lagrange limit is defined as n to infinity but fixed in g times the alpha 1a2 b1b2. A1b, A2b, A3b2. Okay. Let me fix in these times. And for all alphas. And so if you use this rescaling ambiguity, you can state this condition equally as you want G to be of order N minus 3F, and this alpha to be of order N to a 0. And it's important that the alpha are all of the order 1 in order to preserve Meyerlani dominance. And now let me try to give a simple proof of why this deformation will preserve Meyerlani dominance. So let's consider the vacuum supergraph. And with nv vertexes and nl index loop. So if I compare this supergraph with an isotropic deformation without an isotropic deformation, the differences would be something like this. You have some over plus 1 to n, and there are some product of alpha nb. So here I just schematically denote a product of alpha like this, and there can be some repeated indexes in this summand, but the repeated indexes in this form should be understood as not summing over, and then we do the explicit sum. And this guy would be of order n to the n L. So this is because I picked the alpha to be all of order one in this Lagrange limit. And we can see that this Lagrange scaling is the same as the Lagrange scaling of the isotropy model. So everything is the same, and since the isotropy model is a Meloni dominance, so the same as this n-isotropy model. Okay. So this isotropic deformation will actually be important later, but let me postpone more discussion on this.
So did you use supersymmetry in this argument?
Sorry?
Did you use already supersymmetry in this argument?
So these are supersymmetric models. So this is in superpotential.
So is the fact that the vacuum supergraphs case like that, if you put some analogous anisotropic deformation in the
non-supersymmetric. Okay. Oh yes, so yeah, this is also important that because we have supersymmetry, then the alpha will not get renormalized also. Okay, yeah. So now let me try to quickly run through the non-renormalized, the standard non-renormalization theorem argument. Very quickly. So let's first consider the superpotential, and the standard argument goes like this. First, we promote G to a superfield, a background superfield. And then let's try to consider the global symmetry of this theory. And there's just a usual R symmetry, and also there's a U1 flavor symmetry. And under the R symmetry, the tensor field X has charge 1/2. And flavor symmetry 1, and G has arch symmetry charge 0 and flavor charge minus 4. And such that the superpotential should have R charge 2 and flavor charge 0. Okay. And here I consider the isotropic model. For the N isotropic model, the argument is just very simple. So now the third step is try to write down the effective superpotential. So the superpotential would also respect this symmetry, and it should have R symmetry charge 2 and flavor charge 0. And you can see that the most general effective superpotential you can write down would take a form like this. And it should be linear in G, and f of x is a homogeneous function in x of degree 4. So it should have degree 4 is very easy to see because x is charge 1/2. And if f has degree 4, then the G must be, you must be have linear in G. And now we can try to write down what kind of F we can have, for example. So we can have something like this, X to the 4 with the tetrahedral contraction. We have some other vertex. So in general, you can also have some contraction of degree 8 and then divided by some, say a tetrahedral conjunction. Something like this with some coefficient. And then there is a fourth step is that we want to take the g goes to zero limit and match with the bare super potential. Because g goes to zero limit, only the tree level diagram will be important. And then the effective potential should match with the bare potential. And in this limit, we will see that A4 is actually 1 and B4 is 0. And all the other terms are also 0. So that completes the argument for non-renormalization of superpotential. So by this standard result on non-renormalization, we know that other interaction vertices cannot be generated on the RG. And that's in the superpotential. And so, but we also need to look at the Keller potential. And there's no, the Keller potential would get renormalized. And so next, let's discuss a bit more on the Keller potential. So let's see. So as I said, a Keller potential would get renormalized, but we can also try to constrain what kind of effective Keller potential we can have. So the first thing is that suppose in the Keller potential there are some derivative couplings show up. But these derivative couplings would have higher dimension, so they would be irrelevant. So we can just ignore all the derivative couplings. And so since we ignore all the derivative couplings, the Keller potential can just, the effective Keller potential can just schematically written as like this. We have Z2XX bar plus Z4 square. Okay. And so now let's try to make one assumption, and I would try to prove this. At least try to argue this assumption later on. But now let's just assume it. So this is that we assume there's no moduli, no IR moduli. So if we assume there's no IR moduli, so IR moduli would be determined by the F equals to zero equation. So it would be determined by superpotential. And let's suppose that the superpotential has, so F equals zero equation has just one solution at x equals zero. So there's no moduli. And if this assumption is true, then the x will have finite anomalous dimension. And so if x has finite anomalous dimension, then all these higher order terms will be more irrelevant than the leading term z2xx bar. And so the effective Keller potential should take the form like this. So there is only a potential wave function renormalization. And the wave function renormalization is actually just very mild. And this would just amount to some field, some some field redefinition. At least we can define a renormalized field x tilde. That's roughly the square root of z times x. And this would give so if we use this renormalized field, then the superpotential would be can be written as 4 alpha tilde x tilde 4. And so alpha tilde would roughly just be g alpha square root of z. And in terms of renormalized field, the superpotential would still contains only tetrahedral interaction vertex. So the tetrahedral contraction is preserved and we still have Meloni dominance. Okay. So based on the thing that I just argued so far, we have a UV Vn equals 2 comma 2 Landau-Ginzburg model. And it is also solvable in Lagrangian. And it would, under RG flow, it would flow to IR, also n equals 2 comma 2, SCFT. And let me give some comments on the IR SCFT. So first thing is that there is a large IR conformal manifold. So this conformal manifold is given by the anisotropy deformation parameters, and it can be parametrized by the coupling alphas, and since alpha is only defined up to this ambiguous scaling, and so the IR conformal manifold is actually a projective space, and the projective coordinates are these alphas. So the IR in the IR limit, the theory will actually not depend on G, and it will only depend on alpha. And the second thing is that the dimension of this superfield in the IR is fixed to be 1/4, so such that the superpotential is dimension 2. The superpotential is dimension 1. And also by supersymmetry we can try to compute the central charge using the R symmetry anomaly matching. And this will give us that C will be 3 times this sum. Delta I. So this sum is sum over all the chiral fields in the theory, and this delta I is the dimension of all the chiral superfield, and so this gives us 3/2 of n cubed. So by supersymmetry there are also some other interesting quantity we can compute. So for example, we can compute elliptic genus. Or S2 partition function. But I would not talk about them today.
Can you explain how you derive the conformal manifold and the Fallet density equals to 1/4?
Oh, so we know that in the UV, we have this anisotropy deformation. Mm-hmm. And they are not renormalized. These alpha are not renormalized under the RG flow, and they would so if you go down to RG flow to the IR, different alpha will give you different theories. So in the IR, the space of theory will be parametrized by these alphas, and the so G will actually go to infinity in the IR, So the IR theory will not depend on G and will only depend on alpha. And alpha is defined up to the scaling. So there's a IR conformal manifold and it's a projective space and parameterized by the projective coordinates alpha. And so this condition is just simply given by that the dimension of the superpotential need to be 2 in the IR. Sorry, wow. It need to be 1. Yeah. Good. Such that is marginal. Okay. So these are the things from supersymmetry. So next, let me try to comment on what are the things that we can know from the Lagrange limits. And try to see that there are some nice agreement between the Lagrange analysis and the exploitation from supersymmetry. So let me first focus on the isotropy model. So the first thing to notice is that the isotropy model has the same Lagrange correlation function as the 2D SUSY SYK model. So the larger analysis are just exactly the same as the 2D SYK model analysis. And let me try to just briefly review it. So first, the two-point function. And so we write the superfield as the leading component, chi plus theta times psi plus theta squared times auxiliary field F. And consider the two-point function of 2 chi. And by conformal symmetry, this correlation function must take the form like this. And there are only 2 parameters, B and delta. And now from the Swinger-Dyson equation, you can find out that delta must be 1/4 and B must be this. Okay, and this is the same as what we expect from supersymmetry. So next, let me move on, talk a bit on the four-point function. So the four-point function can be solved by summing over a series diagram like this, ladder diagrams. And you can show that just similar to the two-point function that Meynoni diagram dominates, the four-point function, this class of ladder diagram dominates in the larger limit. And if we denote this, the tree-level diagram by F0 and this by F1, that would be some kernel acting on F0. And then this F2 is the kernel square acting on F0. And the kernel is this. So here I just write things schematically, and this action should be understood as doing some integral. And then this is a geometric series, and it can be resummed. And schematically, the summation of all these diagrams goes like this.
And you look at correction functions of 5 by 5.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah, sorry. I mentioned. Yeah. Thanks. And so from this four-point function, we can read off the central charge from it. So the way is to consider the contribution of stress tensor to this four-point function. And we can consider the chi-chi OPE. And the stress tensor, there will be a stress tensor contribution T inside the chi-chi OPE. And the stress tensor contribution will give a term like this in the four-point function. And you can just take this formula and try to extract this term and read off the coefficient and get the central charge. And we can also see that this 3 hat and Q and agree with the result from the asymmetry anomaly matching. And so this four-point function always can tell us contains much more information. For example, we can try to read off the spectrum. I mean, the operator like appear in this OPE from this four-point function. So they are given by the pole of this minus k h bar, and this k h bar is the eigenvalue of the kernel k. So basically, you want to solve the k equals 1 equation, and from that equation you can read off the spectrum of the theory. So roughly the spectrum goes like this. So let's consider the dimension minus spin, and that's the twist. And there's a series of double twist operator. Go like this. The dimension, the twist goes like this. And there is a finite anomalous dimension. I call it epsilon. And this epsilon are all of order 1. And epsilon goes to 0 as n goes to 0 or so as n goes to infinity or j goes to infinity. And these class of operator are coming from this. From this, from 2x and with a bunch of derivative axiom then. And this actually spin.
So the statement is that you have this function k of h, and then you look for the poles of that expression?
Yes.
And how do you go from position space to this h?
So k of h bar are the eigenvalue of this kernel x, and you need to first construct the eigenfunction, and the eigenfunction would there are even in many eigenfunctions that are parameterized by dimension h and h bar, and then you compute this. Yeah. Okay. So all these are the same as the 2D SYK model analysis. So I just discussed this very quickly. And so but these are just for the isotropic model. And right now we have this n-isotropic deformation. And the more interesting thing is to see like how this stuff get changes after we introduce this deformation.
The
So this is the thing I will discuss next. So again, let's first study the two-point function. So these A are not summed over. And by conformal symmetry, it goes like this. So for now, so for the isotropic model, all the coefficients here are the same, but for anisotropic model, we are allowed different coefficients here. And Swinger-Dyson equation will give me this equation. So given an isotropic parameter alpha, you can solve for beta. And yeah. So these beta are related to the wave function renormalization I talked before. And so actually z a1, a2, a3 is b minus 1/2 beta. 1, a2, a3. Minus a half. Okay. So there will be independent wave function normalization for different chiral superfields. And so right now it seems that the anisotropic deformation does not change things much. It just changes the wave function normalization for the 2-point function. But if you consider the 4-point function, you will see some non-trivial changes. If you introduce anisotropic deformation. So the 4-point function can also be solved by summing over the lattice diagram. And the sum can be schematically written like this. So you also have the same kernel acting on the tree level diagram. But right now, every terms will have additional coefficient. I call them Rn. And they will be different for different order. And so let me first define this as some operator A alpha comma K acting on F0, like this. And this coefficient Rn can be just computed exactly. So for example, R0 is just -3 by 1 squared. Okay. And similarly for R1, R2, and so on. And so one important thing is that we want to study is that how the spectrum changes after we introduce this anisotropic deformation. So let's first try to see how we extract the spectrum from this formula. So this equation will have lots of solutions, but I think there will be just one solution for beta to be all positive. So we cannot solve these equations in most generality, but we can try to we solve them by consider a small perturbation away from isotropic model, something like alpha is 1 plus epsilon. And for Rho's class of theory, we can solve this equation and we find out that there is a unique solution. Okay. And so the spectrum is given by the poles of this function A alpha A. So you replace the kernel K by its eigenvalue, and now we want to look at the pole of this function. And as I said that, so to really solve this function, we need to first solve beta and then plug beta into the formula of Rn and compute Rn and then do the summation. And we cannot solve this in the full generality, but we consider this small perturbation. And the thing we found is that this A alpha K is not the same as 1 minus R0. So this shows that the spectrum indeed can be deformed if we introduce this anisotropy deformation. So this is one important thing of this anisotropy deformation. And there is another thing. So how much time do I still have? Oh, there's another thing I will talk about. It's also related to this anisotropy deformation. It's the issue I mentioned before, that in the argument of the Keller potential, the normalization in Keller potential will not ruin the Minnelli dominance. I need to assume that there is no moduli. But the model would actually have moduli, so it's actually not hard to see. So for the isotropy model, for isotropy model, the model would indeed has moduli, but we can prove that for generic and isotropy model, the moduli will get lifted. And so there is no issues of that potential flat directional moduli. So let me try to give a summary and then tell you some future direction we are thinking about. So the first thing, the take home message is that we construct a UV 2,2 solvable model. And it's Mellonic. So, and there is the new deformation that we've introduced is this anisotropy deformation. And this model flow to the IR SCFT. And there is a large conformal manifold. And so this anisotropy deformation has two good things about it. The first thing is that it generates a large conformal manifold. The second thing is that it would lift all the flat directions, and then there's no moduli of the theory. And so that would be important for us to maintain the Meyerlandian dominance. And there are some future directions that we are thinking about. So the first thing is we want to really solve this function A alpha comma K. So right now the status is that we only solve it perturbatively away from the isotropic point. And so if we can fully solve the function A alpha comma K for finite alpha, like finite distance away from the isotropic point, we can see that how the spectrum changes. The spectrum or the chaos exponent changes. And if we can really get this function, then there's one interesting question we can ask, is that whether by turning on the anisotropic deformation, we can lift all the stringy modes. And if this is possible, then we will have a pure supergravity dual. And there is another thing that we are thinking about. So just n equals 2 comma 2, ADL3 supergravity. If we can lift all the stringy modes that in this model. Okay. The third thing is that we can also study this anisotropic deformation in the 1D tensor model. Because in 1D tensor model, there's also no RG flow, and we are allowed to introduce an anisotropic deformation. And as I just show you that, introducing this deformation will keep the Mellonian dominance, and the model will still be solvable. And there is an advantage of this deformation is that there's no O n to Q minus 1 symmetry. Because this symmetry would get broken. And so in the 1D tensor model, if you have O n Q minus 1 symmetry, you can have some extra light modes. So these light modes are coming from the time dependence O n rotation. But seems if we break this O n Q minus 1 symmetry, then there won't be these light modes. And then the behavior of this model will be nicer. And this the thing that we're currently investigating right now. Okay, thanks.
Any more questions for Qining?
So in the fact that this is not anisotropic deformation preserves the Mellonic dominance, are you assuming that you break completely one? Is it important, that part? I didn't understand why it's there, but like, do you need to assume that it breaks completely?
No.
So whatever
anisotropic
deformation would work.
Oh, I see. I see your point. So yeah, you need to. Yeah. So you can consider different level of anisotropy. So the first thing is that you can, for example, you can assume that this parameter does not depend on A1, B1. So it's like A2, B2, A3, B3. So this is like less anisotropic than the most general parameter you can turn on. But in this case, we can see that there will still be remaining flat directions that are not lifted by the anisotropic deformation. And if you have flat directions, then the Keller potential argument will not go through, and you will have some non-trivial normalization on the Keller potential. Yeah, so for example, this one would not kill all the O n cube symmetry. We kill two O n square symmetry, but keep another O n.
Here. More questions for Qining? Yes. In that case, let's thank the speaker again.